I think contact allowances are one of the areas in the game of basketball where we can restore some parity amongst the position groups. Because right now, you can't even look at Klay Thompson the wrong way.
All right, everybody. Welcome to our Saturday morning podcast. We like to, you know, throw a little a change up with this. We bring people on who see the world differently. And it's one of my favorite things I do. That's why we created it. And Kirk Goldsberry is fascinating, a University of Texas professor, a former vice president of strategic research for the San Antonio Spurs, who we've always thought they're the New England Patriots of the NBA. He is a former senior analyst, Team USA Basketball, and he pioneered something that I just kind of caught on to recently. I was fascinated by it, the hexagonal NBA shot chart. He's got a new book called Sprawl Ball, a visual tour of the new era of the NBA. And he basically looks at what it used to be, what it is, and where it's going. And there's kind of a midway point between two dramatically different aesthetics, where mid-range shot gone, center's gone, three-point shot in. And it's my pleasure to bring in Kirk Goldsberry. Kirk, how are you?
I am great. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on, Colin.
You bet. Now, most of us believe the three-point revolution began with Steph Curry. Did it?
It's not for me to say. I think it began truly in 1979 when the league suddenly added a three-point shot. And it's been a steady increase, kind of like a frog in boiling water, so to speak.
Yeah.
1 or 2 percentage points each year. I think Steph is undeniably one of the main characters in sort of the awakening that it used to be sort of believed that you couldn't win the NBA title as a quote-unquote jump shooting team.
Right.
I think Steph, more than any other player, really showed that you could do that, and became the first ever unanimous MVP in NBA history by dominating the game from the perimeter more than anybody else. So I think he's the most visible character in the revolution, but I wouldn't say he started it.
You know, the NBA, and it took me a while to embrace the three-point shot. I said this 2 years ago. I liked the NBA. I felt I did. When there were two or three guys on the floor who could not shoot, when there were a lot of Tristan Thompsons, you look at those New York Knicks teams that everybody, you know, those fabled Knicks teams we all love, Charles Oakley, Anthony Mason, even Jonathan Starks. John Starks was not a great shooter. That team does not work today. That team would be just an oddball collection of guys who can't score. I do miss sort of the back to the basket, the Kareem, the big. But I would say, could I not argue, the game is prettier today.
It's certainly prettier, I think, in beauty's eye and in the eye of the beholder, of course. But, you know, you're exactly right. And one of the things I make sure to do early in the book and often in the book is to say, look, I don't want to go back and watch those Anthony Mason and Charles Oakley teams. That
right.
was ugly.
Yeah.
But what's happening right now, Colin, is the league is in the midst of a major, major metamorphosis. And you hit it on the head earlier. We are at the midway point between two very different versions of the sport. And I happen to think that the game looks beautiful right now. It's open, there's passing, there's diverse types of scoring. However, if you like where it is right now, then counterintuitively, you might want to think about changing it because the changes are so rapid right now. If you love what you're watching in 2019, it's not going to be there in 2024 because we're in the midst of, I always say, it's like the ice caps melting. If you like the size of the ice cap right now, well, then you might want to change something about what's going on. Because here's one crazy stat. If you look at the history of the three-point line, like I said, it's been an increase pretty steady since 1979.
Yeah.
However, three of the biggest 4 year-over-year increases in three-point activity have been in the last 3 years. And so Houston is a prophecy. If you like watching the Rockets, then you're going to love watching the future of the NBA. If you like watching James Harden, you're going to like watching the future of the NBA because that's where they're going. They're taking over half of their shots, Colin, from the three-point area, which is the first team ever in the history of the league to do that. I always joke with my friends they should call it the two-point line in Houston because they're more likely to shoot behind that thing. It's actually a rarer thing that they shoot a two-point shot, which is crazy, and that's where this is all heading. I love the three-point shot. It has opened up the game. That was a goal. The question becomes, Colin, how much is too much?
Yes.
You know, how much is, it's like ketchup on a hot dog. You can have too much ketchup on the hot dog. How much is too much?
This is interesting, Kirk, because the CFL and the Big 12, they don't run the football. It's spread it and pass. The NFL, at the end of the year, as the weather turns, the Bears make the playoffs without an elite quarterback. The Ravens make the quarterback. I like what the NFL does. It's very much always been in my lifetime. The NFL's been the tweak sport. I mean, they'll tweak midseason on stuff. And I think there's value to physicality. I think it plays to middle America, you know, in the bad weather cities. I don't think you want an NFL football that looks like the Big 12 or looks like the CFL. Although I do believe, Kirk, adding components of those sports, I even like the NFL borrowing stuff from the XFL. But I do believe, this is where I think you could get a turnoff. I don't want to watch just three-point shooting. I think physical players relate to the fan base. People love Charles Oakley in New York. There is people love Laimbeer. Could I not argue that if we move into the Harden era, it's just becoming one-on-one basketball? The fan base likes tough. America likes tough guys. We like our Budweiser. We like our hamburgers. You don't want to get too pretty. Could I not argue that?
Yeah, and I think the NBA is my favorite sport in the world because for my entire life, it's been you could be a superstar, that you could look like Shaq and be a superstar,
right,
or you can look like Steph and be a superstar. And to me, the value isn't in physicality or spacing. It's in that diversity, Colin. And I think the league should be really trying to make it possible for all those five traditional position groups to thrive in different ways, in the mid-range, on the block, in the corner, and pick and roll, whatever it is. We need to make sure that all of those venues are still relevant in the game. And I think where we're going as a sport is we're diminishing the value of some of those venues, and while the other ones are becoming sort of caricatures of value. And the spot-up shooter is way too important in the league, in my opinion, right now. And what he does isn't that fun to watch at the arena. Do you really love watching these endless three-point shots? I don't, and that's where I bring my own personal beliefs into it.
Yeah.
I think the NBA is at its best when there are physical players, when there are athletes, when there are sharpshooters, and all of these guys come together, and who knows who's going to come out. And I think, yeah, one of the things we want to think about as a league is how do we preserve these five position groups and the ability for all of them to be superstars.
You have a chapter on James Harden called The Investor. go into detail on that.
Well, you know, I'll steal from Pablo Torre, a friend of mine and one of the really best young thinkers in sports media. He says James Harden plays basketball like a tax attorney. And I think that's a really clever phrase. But I call him the investor because Harden is complicated. For me, he's complicated. On the one hand, he's the best, smartest superstar we have. He is shrewd. He only does things that are sort of analytically correct. As an investor, he invests in the exact right behaviors. And he doesn't touch things that we know are inefficient. He has honed his entire portfolio in on what's smart. And part of the credit goes to him. Part of it goes to Mike D'Antoni, and part of it goes to Daryl Morey. Regardless, what he's seeing right now, I think, is the closest thing to a basketball prophecy that we'll ever see. He's the future of the sport. And some of my friends don't like watching it. And that's where it gets complicated. He is so smart. The things he does, particularly drawing fouls, the smartest play in the league. As Dean Smith said years ago, the best place to score on the basketball court is the free throw line.
Yeah.
And he knows that, and he exploits that more than anybody. I mean, the stat that I think sums Harden up more than almost anything, Colin, is when he won his MVP award last year, he was the first MVP in NBA history who, at the time of his award, had made more free throws than he made field goals. And that tells you it's very smart, but it's kind of maddening.
Yeah.
And for many of us, like if it's true that he's a prophecy, is this what we want to see going forward?
As any coach or general manager will tell you, the foundation of any great team is great talent. So it's no surprise teams dedicate so much time and effort towards finding the right players. And the same rule applies when it comes to hiring. You need top talent, but you don't have endless resources to find it. Luckily, they do at ZipRecruiter. They scout talent for you. One click sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. The powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job.
ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day.
And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Hurt. ZipRecruiter.com/Hurt.
H-E-R-D. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Placate me for a second on this. Baseball has defensive shifts, and I think it hurts the game. And I know this is very TV of me, okay? I want Bryce Harper on base. I want the camera on him. He's handsome. I don't want him hitting home runs or only striking out. The defensive shift takes him off the bases. And I think one of the things baseball struggles with is their stars are either in the dugout, circling the bases back into the dugout. And whereas the NBA star is on the court for 40 minutes, NFL star Brady gets 60 snaps, NHL guy is on, you know, he's out quickly back on the ice. In baseball, the defensive shift, I think analytically, is savvy and clever like Harden, but it hurts the television product.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hockey says you can't stay in the crease. Basketball says you can't stay in the lane. Football has all sorts of provisions based on where you can stand and not. I think the defensive shift is just bad for business. So could I not make an argument that Harden, though, is not aesthetically pleasing and that you'd have to tweak it, maybe move the three-point line back? How about this? Kirk, what about bringing the hand check back in the league?
Right. Yeah, I think contact allowances are one of the areas in the game of basketball where we can sort of restore some parity amongst the position groups. Because right now, you can't even look at Klay Thompson the wrong way without getting a three-shot foul drawn.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But LaMarcus Aldridge or Karl Anthony Towns, who are foolish enough to put their back to the basket on the block, can get pounded and armbarred. Imagine if you put an armbar into one of these perimeter shooters. Suddenly, their efficiency isn't that good. So I do think, Colin, you hit the nail on the head. And I want to come back with baseball in a second, too. But you hit the nail on the head because this is a lot about what happened in 2004. You remember the Lakers with Kobe, the Bryce Harper of the NBA at that time. He gets shut out by an ugly defensive Pistons team. That's the summer where we outlawed hand checking.
Yeah.
The next year, Steve Nash comes out of relative obscurity to win the MVP award. He's tiny. He's brilliant, don't get me wrong. But when you can't touch him, suddenly the best players in the league are different than who they were 2 years ago.
Sure.
He wins two MVPs. Baseball, you know, Pop had this great quote earlier this season in Chicago, Coach Popovich, about playing analytically correct basketball. And I love that turn of a phrase. It meant a lot from him. But what is aesthetically correct? After you said, you know, baseball is in a crisis. There was a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal last year. I think the article was by Jared Diamond. And one of the stats that stuck out in there was that it's about 4 minutes on average between balls hit and play in a Major League Baseball game right now. And that's just too long. Imagine 4 minutes. Somebody can run a mile in 4 minutes. This is a long time if you're at a game, particularly if you're watching on TV. And I think you bring up a great point. Let's not pretend these aren't entertainment businesses. Let's not pretend that the aesthetic of the sport isn't the most important thing.
Oh, the NFL. Yeah, Kirk, NFL has always considered themselves a television show. I mean, they change rules for the box that I watch the game on.
That's right. No, that's a great point. And, like, let's not pretend that these things are holy. Now, as a steward of the game, I like to think, especially youth basketball, we need to make sure that pro sports are good for our youth and they're learning good habits and good traits and becoming better citizens as they play these games more and more. But yeah, I think we want to make sure that our sports are entertainment. I mean, it's hard to watch a baseball game when you have a tablet in front of you or a phone next to you or you're at a baseball game. It's becoming harder and harder as the trends that analytics have brought to pass. Now, here's where I would say it's really interesting. People are quick to say analytics ruin baseball. No, analytics just uncovered what was always there. The rule base is what analytics are. They're just exploiting things that are in the rule base. So if you don't like what you're seeing from the analytics community, go change the rule base and they'll conform to it and they'll find ways to optimize whatever playing surface and rule base you come up with. And I think that's where both sports, and probably football as well, but I'm more interested in baseball and basketball. How can we design an analytically optimal aesthetic for the future of our sports?
Yeah, I always said that with Twitter. All it does is unveil what we always thought was true. People, there's a lot of right-wingers out there, and there's a lot of liberals in the media, and that's fine. They were always there. It just unveiled them.
Right.
What do I do then? Kirk Goldsberry is joining us. ESPN NBA analyst, staff writer, University of Texas professor, a fascinating former VP strategic research, San Antonio Spurs. He's got a book called Sprawl Ball, a visual tour of the new era of the NBA. And it's fascinating. It looks at the old NBA, the current NBA, and where it's going. And we're in the midst of a revolution here. So I'll tell you a player I love. I loved his he wasn't a rookie because he got hurt his first year, Ben Simmons. But this becomes very fascinating. I think Ben Simmons and Russell Westbrook are similar. They're body reliant. Simmons' size, Westbrook's athletics. Neither can shoot. I don't think either's easy to coach. So what do I do as a general manager? I've got a Ben Simmons or a Westbrook. And Sam Presti chose Westbrook over a better shooter in Harden and a greater player in Durant. And now people say he didn't choose Westbrook over Durant, but when Durant left, he made several comments that he felt the organization enabled Westbrook and babied him. So what do I do? It's pretty clear now that Westbrook is enigmatic or problematic in the postseason. What do I do, though, going forward for 10 years with Ben Simmons? Let's say you run the Sixers. Well, yes. Embiid I'm already paying, and I can get 20 and 10 a night from him. Jimmy Butler can shoot. Tobias Harris is okay. I wouldn't pay him big money. But Ben Simmons on the open market, I don't think he plays well with Embiid. On the open market, you could get a ton. But what is Ben Simmons' value going forward, Kirk? He doesn't shoot and has no real interest in, and I don't think he'll ever be an elite shooter. What do I do with him?
That's a fantastic question. I hope to give you a decent answer. I would say look no further than Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where they have a young man who can't shoot, who's very talented at getting to the basketball hoop and finishing, and a capable passer. What Giannis can do as a finisher, Ben can't do, but he's pretty good.
Yeah.
And he's a better passer. So what did Mike Budenholzer do to win Coach of the Year, in my opinion, this year? And what did John Horst do in Milwaukee as the general manager to win Executive of the Year? They built a system around this guy. And this is something that the Lakers failed to do this year in Los Angeles. And this is something that Joel Embiid, to your point, gets in the way of this idea. But yeah, surround both Westbrook and Simmons with 5-4 shooters. So at all times, you know, Ben Simmons is number 3 in the NBA in 3-point assists. He can't shoot it himself, but 82% NBA threes are assisted, right? So who's creating that shot? Well, it takes a lot of energy tactically to actually create those shots. And few players can actually generate those assists like Ben and Russell as well. And Oklahoma City isn't a very great team right now because, again, they're shooting on the edge around this shot creator, aside from Paul George, is weak. But LeBron, again, much better interior force, led the league in paint scoring all decade. Great passer. His best teams in Miami and Cleveland were surrounded by dudes like Ray Allen, Shane Battier, Mike Miller, Kevin Love. They don't have people like that in Philly. They don't have people like that in Los Angeles. So I would say look to what the Bucks have done to become a top 5 offense in the league out of nowhere by surrounding their similar player with shooting. It's about 3-point shooting, stupid, to paraphrase an old president.
Yeah.
Like, they need to be surrounded because you can't. Remember you said earlier in the conversation you have to have 2 or 3 guys. You like the NBA when it was 2 or 3 guys who couldn't shoot on the court.
Yeah.
Those days are gone. I think you can have 1, maybe 2. And with Ben Simmons on the court, your point guard's already one of them. So you need everybody else on that team to be able to shoot.
Yeah, and I think in a 7-game series, you can really marginalize a team with 2 non-shooters. I mean, you could just don't guard them. You don't have to guard Draymond Green. Now Boogie Cousins is out for the Warriors. So it's kind of like, you know, you got 3 guys to guard and 2 guys you don't have to. Warm weather season, basically here. Luckily, Tommy John, the most comfortable underwear on the planet, has the fabrics you need to stay cool, dry, and adjustment-free. So many new arrivals, new prints, colors, patterns, so you got a lot of options this summer. Head over now to TommyJohn.com. Just check it out yourself. Some life-changing products. Not only do they have ridiculously soft loungewear, this is the stuff I wear at home at night when I'm watching sports, around the house, all new, insanely soft second skin polo now is reinventing casual comfort for dudes who want to feel as great as they look. They're so sure you're going to love the fit and feel. They have the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. That means if you don't love the first pair, you get a full refund. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. All you have to do to get 20% off your first order is go to TommyJohn.com/herd. You know how to spell it, H-E-R-D. TommyJohn.com/herd. Highly recommend the loungewear at home. Now, I wear their t-shirts and socks, but the loungewear is different level stuff. Tommy John, Heard.com/heard. I want to wrap this up. Kurt Goldsberry, fascinating stuff. You pioneered the hexagonal NBA shot chart. Now, we're doing a podcast now, so people can't see it. But I would tell my audience, I'll even spell it, H-E-X-A-G-O-N-A-L, the hexagonal NBA shot chart. It's one of the first times I was introduced to you, and it talks about efficiencies, inefficiencies. Houston's a very efficient team now. For the record, I think on your shot chart, Utah is too, but they're getting crushed in that series. Yeah. Explain as well as you can for a podcast audience the hexagonal shot chart.
Okay, well, a shot chart is essentially looking at where a player shoots most often and where he or she is most effective. So there's two sort of characteristics of everybody in the world who shoots basketballs a lot, and yourself, myself included. Where are we shooting, number one, and how good are we shooting at those places? So the charts that I developed in 2012 and presented at MIT, now my background is cartography and data visualization. I was a professor for a long time before I got into sports. How can we visualize these new data sets that started coming into sports analytics? So the hexagonal shot chart is an approach where we look at a tile of hexagons all over the basketball court and identify which of those hexagons players are most active in and which they're most or least efficient in. And so it tries to characterize those two primary elements of shooting evaluation over the space of the court. So you can quickly realize, oh yeah, Ben Simmons doesn't even try to shoot threes. Russell Westbrook does try to shoot threes, but he's not very good at them. Steph Curry shoots a lot of threes, and he's very good at them. So these charts intend to show people that, not just tell them those facts, but show them. And I encourage anybody to just look up my name. And if you do images, you'll see about thousands of these charts anytime you look my name up, because I do think they do a really good job of helping individuals quickly grasp what a player tries to do to score the basketball in an NBA game.
You know, Kirk, it's funny because Daryl Morey is a friend of mine and we talk often, and he uses I use a line called Manalytics, is that I'm a proponent of analytics. Yeah. But let's not nerd out here. We are dealing right. with 24-year-old alpha male millionaires. You cannot reduce them to numbers. It'll piss them off. They'll tune you out. And so I think Barkley goes over the top, and you know, it's like clubbing baby seals. He's always picking on, you know, all the analytic guys. But I do now, and you can rip me on this, I do think there's value in Manalytics. Is there are certain guys, Chauncey Billups was one of these guys. He lubricated the room. He was right. good with other men. He knew the temperature. Carmelo, I thought, had a very he was bad for the room. He didn't have the self-awareness I like. So talk about that. You want right. analytics, but we are dealing with high, successful, rich men. Do you ever think some of this, when you were with the Spurs, was that discussed a little?
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, I think it was, and I learned nothing more at the Spurs than learning about the human element. This is a small tribe of humans that we're trying to sort of go do elite things with. And you have to look at that human element. Like presentation of these things, Colin, can go really bad. And a lot of analysts have failed to break through. In my time with Team USA and working with Coach K, and my time at the Spurs working with Pop, you quickly see these guys are expert communicators. They know how to run the tribe, so to speak, and they are very good leaders, in part because they don't just throw random esoteric information at these dudes. They wait for their moment, they learn how to message it, and they take the stuff that you want them to communicate, and they decide when the time is right and when the method is correct, and they'll deliver it in that way. And I think Daryl Morey is a legend because the hardest part of sports analytics isn't the models or running the computer stuff. It's implementing it in a pro basketball environment. And he's done that better than anybody. And so that is, like I said, that's the hardest part of analytics is getting it implemented in this environment that you're describing. Manalytics, whatever you want to call it, I love it. It's just, you have to be a really good communicator and a strategist sort of in a political way to successfully implement these ideas and communicate them. And I can think of no better example than Daryl, who's done this so well for the last number of years in Houston. And now look, they're a legitimate contender to win the NBA championship.
This is a real pleasure for me. Kurt Goldsberry, Sprawl Ball, a visual tour of the new era of the NBA. And it just kind of explores the past, the present, and the future of the league, and it's really in transition. It looks like, obviously, Golden State, but Houston is really in front of this thing. And, Kirk, good luck to you, and thank you so much for giving us time. You got stuff going on. You live in one of America's great cities. I imagine you live in Austin, Texas?
Now, I live in the center of Austin, Texas.
Oh, God, what a
city.
Oh, yes, sir. Great food, good music. Thank you so much, Kirk.
Hey, thank you, Colin.